CliffCentral.com.
Let's get to speak to Christian Kutz. He is the Senior Vice President of Global Consumer Insights at Viacom. Now, you're asking yourself, why? Well, one of the things, because, I mean, we like Viacom, but why would we be interested in speaking to Christian just out of the blue? I'll tell you. It's very simple. We've got all these generational questions that are being raised all the time. You know how it goes. People say, oh, well, I'm a millennial. You're a Generation Xer. You are a generation, you're a baby boomer for our parents and that kind of thing. So nobody knows what the definitions of these generations are. Nobody seems to understand what all of them mean. And most importantly, people don't necessarily know who they are, what they want, and how you get to them, how you get to talk to them, how you get to address the things that matter to them. Now, doesn't that sound fascinating to you? Because it's damn interesting to me. And the research has been done. People have been spending a huge amount of time and effort trying to figure out who millennials are. We're going to find out, Sia, whether you're a little big kid, a millennial, or a Generation X.
A little big kid.
I'm a Generation S for Sia.
No. Oh. By that answer, I'm going to guess you're a millennial. Okay. So we're going to find out all about this. Christian, it's very nice to have you here. You're from New York, my favorite city in the world.
I'm based over there, yes.
Nice to see you, man.
And you too.
How long are you in South Africa for?
Only a few days, actually. I'm leaving tonight, which is nowhere near long enough.
No. Have you had fun so far?
Yes. To be fair, I've not seen much other than the airport, the hotel, and a few conference rooms, but yes.
Well, listen, you've got to start somewhere. And you've done a lot of presentations, and you've spoken to a lot of people about this generational thing, because it is a thing. There are very definite differences. Some people love millennials. Some people absolutely hate them, and they can't figure out why. Millennials themselves aren't sure whether they're millennials or not, because it seems to be a very broad range of people. But what interests me is also their consumer behavior. What do they watch? What do they listen to? What do they eat? What do they buy? What do they wear? Where do they go? What are their goals in life? What matters to them? Do they care about a house, a nuclear family, a Volvo station wagon? You know, what are the things that make these people who they are? And the reason I say it's generational is because living now and growing up now is very different to the way maybe that you grew up. So where do we even begin with research like this? Who commissioned it?
We did. So we did this off our
own back.
As Viacom, yeah. And Viacom, for those of your listeners who might not know, is
massive like media business.
Nickelodeon, Nick Jr., MTV, right. Comedy Central. So we really wanted to understand the entire audience, going from the preschoolers all the way up there.
Right. Viacom, you guys, I've seen your building in Manhattan. Is that where you work?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Very tall building.
Right. CBS is there as well, right?
They're across the road, yeah.
Right. It's all one company. Who's the big boss there now?
Sumner Redstone.
Is he still trying to get laid all the time, or are you not allowed to talk about that?
I couldn't possibly say anything.
Because he's the horniest old man in the world. We read about him often in the news. I don't want to get you into trouble. All right. So CBS commissioned this. Well, Viacom commissioned this so we could find out about our audience when it comes to Nickelodeon, one of the most successful kids' channels anywhere. You've got Comedy Central, which is also a breakaway success. This came out of pretty much nowhere. Everybody thought it was going to be a tiny little channel. Worldwide now, there are a number of countries that have Comedy Central available. But in America, it's huge.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. All right. So you commissioned this research. Who do you look at? What age groups are we looking at here?
It's actually three different pieces that we're talking about, and that's why it's those little big kids things. So we looked at the preschoolers, so the 2 to 5-year-olds.
Wow.
Then we looked at the young adult or teens and young adults, so 16 to 24-ish.
Okay.
And then we looked at Gen X, so the 30 to 49-ish people. And it's really, really interesting to see the differences between all of those. And one of the things you said earlier about the young people, millennials, do they care about the house and the family and the station wagon? We actually found that even the Gen Xers don't really care about that.
Right.
It's not about those traditional milestones anymore. It's being an adult seems to be a mindset. It's feeling adult. And they've really done that first. And the millennials are now taking that and building on that.
Millennials actually call it adulting.
Yes. I don't want to adult today.
Yes. It's exactly that. And okay. I think that's the difference as well, is because that is a bit of playing adult, right?
Yeah.
It's doing something adult right now.
Yeah.
Well, eventually you have to kind of become one. We all do.
No.
All right. So let's start with the oldest ones.
Yeah.
Because they're the ones that are the least mysterious. They you kind of have more data on them. They've been around longer. Generation X. I mean, do they have any common ground? Is there anything that a Generation Xer in India would have in common with a Generation Xer in Los Angeles?
Yes. And that's one of the real big things that we found, is that Gen X really has become the first global generation. Now, millennials were born global, but Gen Xers have become that.
Hmm.
And it really all started with, if you think about what's the time that they grew up in, and what happened in those times, right? So we saw the fall of dictatorships and the rise of a middle class in Latin America. We saw the fall of the Berlin Wall and the Iron Curtain. We saw the end of apartheid. And we started to see financial boom and bust economies.
Mm-hmm.
And this thing that we call the internet was just becoming a thing as we grew up.
Yeah.
And that happened in a world that started to talk to each other a lot more than we had previously. And that is really the formative experiences that we had. And then... what that led to, and Douglas Copeland, who coined the term, he's an author, he coined the term Generation X, which is, by the way, a word that wasn't even created until 30 years after Gen Xers were born, while we now have terms for people who aren't even born yet.
Yeah.
That X stood for not wanting to be defined, and the X in an equation, that's what's to be figured out.
Oh, okay.
Oh, solve for X.
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of my buddy and Ben and I suppose. None of us like to be categorized into one box.
Well, you see, this is exactly what I was going to ask. So what kind of age range are you talking about when you talk about Generation X? And the other problem is, depending on which literature you're reading, these age ranges seem to change. Who gets to have the final authority on that?
The other day, she came up as a millennial. Now, I mean, she looks young, but you got to believe me. She's been around a little while. All right.
I'm an old soul.
So, is there a definite age range?
The short answer is no, there isn't.
Mm.
It depends on which academic you believe, when and where. And also, it varies slightly by geography. Right. So a lot of these terms are coined in the US, and we're working with a number of generational scientists.
Mm-hmm.
But then you look at how does that travel around the world, and culture does travel, but sometimes there's a delay and there's a lag on there. So we've simply made the call for the purpose of this particular piece of research. We said the 30 to 49 year olds, that's who we call Gen X for this purpose, which is a little bit younger than you would have called that in the US. In the US, it would have been 35 to 54 or something.
Okay.
Like that.
All right, so those people, it's all about not being defined.
Exactly.
And change. I mean, all those things that you mentioned about the way they grew up with all of the massive social upheaval that happened during their lifetimes,
mm-hmm.
the collapse of communism, the collapse of apartheid, the changes in Latin America and in the U.S. in politics, in the boom and bust economy. So there was always this uncertainty and change,
which
makes the X.
Exactly. And that really then drives also to, I mean, they were the rebellious slacker youth generation, right? That's
right.
Who they/we are.
Mm.
And what really happened is, the question is, what happened to that rebellion? And as soon as the millennials came along, nobody started looking at the Gen Xers anymore because, you know, the assumption is, oh, they got old, they got boring. And
turned into their parents.
Exactly. And we found that they absolutely didn't. So that rebellion has matured into a fierce independence of wanting to do my thing in my way. And that's really what we're finding so strongly with Gen Xers.
This is such a nicely articulated position because this is really distilling what a lot of people have been trying to read in society for a long time. It must be gratifying to look at this research and say that's a sentence we can use.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
All right, so that's Gen X. Who cares about them because they're old? Now let's talk about the millennials.
Yeah. So there's obviously a lot to talk about with the millennials.
Let's break these bastards down.
Delightful.
And one of the really interesting things that we found with this part of the audience is that obviously the world is changing drastically and rapidly, and we are all living in this world regardless of how old you are, and you're all reacting and responding to this in different ways. And what we're seeing with millennials is that they have figured out a way of coping with all of the stuff that's happening, and we're still living in a recession.
Yeah.
We've got political drama everywhere in the world. Mm-hmm. We've got all that type of stuff happening. And there's three ways that we found they're coping with that, and that is essentially being unapologetic, sensitive, and restless. And those are kind of different ways of approaching things.
Unapologetic, sensitive, restless. Okay.
And the really interesting thing is that they're not any one of them, they're all three of them. And they're mixing and mashing and matching and copy morphing all of those things together. And that's why we called that particular piece of research youth in flux. Because that's what we're seeing is we're seeing influx. We're seeing a lot of flexing and fluxing. And between those three different ways of dealing with the world, that's how the different situations are happening. The restlessness being the most obvious and the one that those who would talk about youth and criticize it are picking up on and observing. There's just so much happening. But what they're oftentimes not seeing is the sensitive nature and the how the first reaction to anything happening anywhere is empathy. There's an earthquake over there. The first question is, oh my God, I feel bad for those people who are impacted, which isn't necessarily the first go-to for other people in other places and in other age groups. And that is one of these interesting things is where you're starting to combine these. We're also, of course, as part of that, seeing the impact of the internet and how that works and how social media has an impact there and how social media has really become a frenemy for particularly this age group.
You can't block it out. So you are living in the news all the time.
Yep. That's the biggest point.
And you can't, you know, in previous generations, I suppose it was possible to not be interested in that, to be a scientist and live in a laboratory or to be a doctor or to be a farmer. And you didn't have to worry about these things. Yep. Now, everyone is on social media and it's relentless. Yep. And it doesn't stop. And it's 3 a.m. and it's 2 p.m. and it's 7 p.m. And you are on all the time. Even if you're not involving yourself, you're involved.
And if you're going on Facebook or Twitter or InstaPix, whatever, yeah, any of them, you also can't help but notice what's happening in the world because people are talking about it. Mm. It's no longer a conversation among your friends, which is what social media started out as being. It's a news forum. And that is also, you can't escape it, right? Many years ago, you could choose not to watch the evening news because that's where you got your news. And if you don't want to watch it, you don't want to watch it.
But there was just one evening news, for God's sake. It was easy. Everybody, if you did wonder, and most people want to be informed about the world they live in because we like to be, you know, not surprised by horrible things that crop up. So people would watch it. But then once the news bulletin was done, you could go back to doing other things. Now it's 24/7.
Yeah, it's always on and you can't escape it. And that's one of the reasons that technology is becoming that frenemy, because it obviously makes living your life a lot easier and you're relying on it for a lot of things, but you kind of also want to detox every once in a while and stay away from it. And we're seeing funny little anecdotes, like this was a group of kids in Singapore who went out for dinner and they put all of their phones in the middle of the table and whoever touches it first gets to pay the bill. That was their way of making sure that they're actually there and in the moment and in the present. What's really, really interesting we're seeing there is that humans have always valued more what they have less of. And one of the things that we're seeing that millennials have less of is actual human interaction. Mm. So there is a premium now put on how do I relate to people? How do I build a relationship that isn't swiping right or left? How does all of that
work together? Marry into what you said about empathy earlier? Because if you're going to be empathetic about people who you don't even know involved in an earthquake somewhere, isn't that just a kind of virtue signaling? And in real life, you're pretending to care about them. You're saying the right thing, but you're not having a meaningful relationship with those people because they're in some place that you don't even know. You can't point to it on a map. You don't know any of their names. It's very superficial. So you're dancing always between the superficial social media world and the meaningful real world that you crave.
Yeah, that's exactly the conflict that we're seeing develop. And we're seeing that develop on so many, many levels. So one of the examples was, I love technology, but I hate how much I use it. Mm. And that conflict of, I want real relationships, but the relationships I do build are sometimes superficial. I have hundreds of friends, in air quotes. That's the conflict that we're seeing develop within these kids, people. And there isn't yet an answer for that. So they're working really, really hard to figure this out themselves. And there may not be an answer. It may become that duality of you do both.
What else do millennials really care about? You mentioned that they care about meaningful human interaction because there's less of it.
Mm-hmm.
They obviously value their time a lot more because they've got so many demands on their time. What about in terms of consumerism and in terms of products and of things that even just money? Do they value money?
They value money, yes, but not in a not in the same way that we would have traditionally thought about it. It's and if you talk about work or jobs, that's the easiest way to explain that. Is it's wanting to do something that matters. It's not, I don't want to have a job to just make money and be rich. I want to make an impact. I want to enjoy what I'm doing. And that's what I want to, why I want to do it. And that's really the idea where the money comes in. So it's less material. It's also they want to own a lot fewer things because why own if you can rent it, right? Like the way that the digital world has changed all of that things. So it's much less materialistic and the non-tangible things are becoming more important again as well.
And if you contrast that with Generation X?
There's a starting point in Gen X there, but it's nowhere near as expressed as with millennials. So the Gen Xers still want to have stuff, and they still build their, you know, man caves and whatever it is. That all of that stuff is still there. It's much more physical still. Mm-hmm. But the if you will, spiritual idea of I want to do something that is good is there, but it needs to work for me. Right. While for millennials, it needs to be good for the world. So that's a slight difference. They do want to change the world.
It seems like a progression in the right direction.
Absolutely. Yes.
Where do Gen X and millennials clash the most? Because in my experience, I find that old people have very little patience and time for millennials. They're very cruel about the things that they say about them.
I absolutely, know what you mean. You're absolutely right.
But old people are also very egotistical in the sense that they genuinely believe
they're right
that they are better than millennials.
But I think you're completely right. But I think that's always been that way.
Yeah.
Because you read any story that anybody has ever written about youth, they were never part of that, and they always looked down on it. Mm-hmm. And that started in the 60s when they were talking about the hippies and, oh, my God, they're going to ruin the world. And then the next one, and the Gen Xers are rebellious, and, oh, my God, they're horrible. And now it's happened. Well, actually, then it happened with the millennials. Now it's happening with the next ones already. So it's always that it's the perspective, and it's that conversation that's not necessarily happening between the generations.
And don't you find that, by and large, Generation X's are a little less optimistic about the world. And it's not just a function of age. That's also because they grew up in a time where there wasn't, you never knew what was going to happen. Whereas millennials are optimistic about the future. The promises of technology, the promises of better healthcare, the promises of the spread of democracy, of food security, of all these things that were major concerns to our parents and grandparents and are not anymore, have given millennials pause for thought, and they believe that tomorrow will be better than today.
Absolutely. And I think that's one of the interesting things that we're now seeing towards the younger end of the millennials. They're becoming a lot more realistic again. So it's not that blind optimism anymore. Right. And I don't mean this in a negative way in any way, shape, or form.
So the late 20-year-olds are blindly optimistic as opposed to the early 20-year-olds who are less optimistic, more realistic.
More realistic, yes. Still optimistic, still forward-looking, but thinking about, okay, what can I achieve realistically?
And see as busy trying to figure out which kind he is. What about you?
No.
I mean, do you agree with all this?
Yes, because I'm blindly optimistic. I'll honestly admit that. I can wake up tomorrow and go, actually, yes, my calling is in Uganda, you know, working somewhere on a farm.
He comes to me a couple of months ago. You comment on this, please. I need this is almost like a therapy session.
Don't
for us.
Judge me.
Sia comes to me a couple of months ago. He goes, oh, I've decided I want to go teach kids in Southeast Asia to speak English. And he ups and we said, sure, you go ahead, go and find yourself, you know, explore the world.
Then so
he
2 goes seconds off. Later, I was like, actually, no.
Then he comes back to us at the beginning of this year. He's like, hey, what are you guys up to?
Did you ever make it there?
Okay. I was like, it's grimy. They'd have to sleep on the floor. But my heart's in the right place. You
That's
see?
Absolutely
I
it.
Do
yes.
want to help the little Asian kids, but from the comforts of my cotton sheets and high thread counts.
Oh, see,
and that's
you
actually
are.
An interesting one because even if you think about activism and things like that, a lot of times that now takes the form of saying something on Twitter.
Yes.
And that's perceived as activism.
Yeah.
Where it's quite an interesting thing to think about because there's a big difference between posting something and physically doing something, right?
Physically doing something is hard. By the way, while we're talking about these things, who is more satisfied with their sex lives?
Ooh.
Well, let's take a poll on that one.
Yeah. No, no, seriously. I mean, what have you discovered in your research?
We found that Gen Xers value sex life more than millennials on and are more satisfied with their sex life. They've also had a bit longer to practice, I would say,
isn't it an age thing and experience?
I think the satisfied with, I would agree, yes, that's an age thing, but the value of is different. And we find that for millennials, the friendship, that part of the relationship is more valued or important than for Gen Xers, who are more short-tempered at the point, as I think you said that earlier,
impatient.
Right? Let's get to the point.
Sure.
And that's a really, really interesting thing as well, because the way that the media in general portrays married couples is not that, right? And you look at a lot of times it says, oh, married couples, sex is becoming a chore. You don't do any of that. And that's not how people feel.
That's how it used to be, though.
That's how it used to be, absolutely.
Those 1950s commercials that you would have seen of these perfect nuclear American families, that doesn't happen anymore. Relationships have changed. Marriage has changed. Children have changed.
And the shape of family has changed completely as well. And that's another thing that's really important, as
Generation X's, we're kind of being, just because we're of a function of age, we're kind of being put into the same box that our parents were in at that age, which is not the box that fits.
Yeah. And that's exactly why we're doing this and why we wanted to do this, because Gen X has been labeled this, you know, rebellious youth generation. And since then, nobody's ever looked at it again.
Nobody cares anymore.
And we want to care because we want to know that and reflect the audience.
All right. Where is it going, though? Because the most exciting part of all this is not the millennials or the Generation X. It's these kids, because they're the ones who are going to determine the next wave of an interesting human behavior. And the world they're growing up in is completely different to everything else.
Yeah. One quick point on that, though, is the world that they're growing, that they are born into, is the world we are all living in. So all of these things have an impact on all of us.
Sure, of course.
But obviously,
nothing in isolation.
No, exactly. And that's another point, that you can't really isolate a generation and say, right, that the 35-year-old is this and the 36-year-old is something
else. I mean, there's probably stuff I do that's annoyingly millennial to Generation X's, and there's probably Generation X stuff I do that makes millennials furious.
Yeah, and that's true for everyone, right?
Sure.
But we look at the very young end, and at the preschoolers we looked at, so the 2 to 5-year-olds, and we specifically wanted to look at that because every 3 years there's a new group of them, right?
Yeah.
So they're changing very, very quickly.
Right.
And while they're still learning language about 8 words a day and visuals, and their brain is still forming, all of that stuff is the same. That's not changed. What has changed is the environment that they're growing up in. And that's exactly the same things we talked about before. What has turned out to be really interesting there is that the parents of those preschoolers don't know what they are preparing their kids for anymore. Because, and this is a stat from the World Economic Forum, about 2/3 of kids who are in elementary school or primary school today will work in jobs that do not exist today. And while
two-thirds.
It's not my stat. I'm just quoting that.
Think of every job you can imagine right now. If you're lucky, those will be 1/3 of the jobs that people will have in 20 years.
I mean, that's both frightening and exciting.
You know, I get it on like a surface level, like a travel agent. You know, that's going to be obsolete in a number of years. But now you think like 2/3, that's a lot. Probably people we encounter on a daily basis, we won't have to.
And you think about it the other way around as well. My prime example is always social media manager. Who knew 20 years ago that thing was a thing?
Yeah.
You know, it's those types of things that are going to be changing quite a bit in how we do things.
Yeah.
And you have automation on top of that as well.
I think that's exciting. I mean, yeah, there's going to be a lot of menial work that won't be carried out by humans soon. Mm-hmm. So there won't necessarily be those low-skilled, laborious jobs.
You might not even have drivers anymore because cars drive themselves apparently.
Oh, wow. So what kinds of jobs will there be for people who are not intellectuals, philosophers, thinkers, programmers?
Mm-hmm.
What kinds of jobs will those people who would have done the menial labor, what will they be doing in 20 years' time? What will their children be doing?
Yeah, and that's obviously I don't have an answer to that, but that's exactly what is going through the parents of preschoolers today's mind. Because that's I can't prepare you for anything, so therefore I can't prepare you.
Here's a laptop.
Well, technology is exactly one of those things because that is the one constant that they know is going to be there. So programming, coding, that type of, we obviously teach that to kids in school now as well. But parents of preschoolers are talking about how technology makes their kids smarter and it prepares them for the world that's out there or that's going to be out there. Cause I don't know what that is. So I want to give them the tools to be able to navigate them when that is. And what that resulted in is that a few years ago, we were talking about helicopter parenting or Velcro parenting, all that type of stuff, being really, really close to your kid and making sure that nothing bad happens to them. What we're seeing today is that that's not going to happen anymore because I don't know what they're going to have to do. So I need them to learn problem solving.
You can't see the danger. So exactly. How can you be helpful?
Exactly.
In fact, your parent might be an impediment to your progress and success because they're stopping you from something that you need to be a part of.
Yes. And we saw exactly that actually 5-ish years ago. We were talking to a bunch of school teachers and one of them was telling us that when she was teaching first grade, when kids get to school, they have zero social skills. Because they never had to interact with other kids without their parents being there protecting them and making sure that nobody throws sand at them in the sandbox. Mm. And that parents clearly have taken to heart and are starting to address that. So they're now building a bigger walled garden, if you will, within which they're comfortable for their kids to explore and to experiment. And we're seeing that in things like preschoolers are being taught how to use knives safely because they're going to have to do it at some point. There's classes about how to deal with fire. They're using crockery and glass plates because they're going to have to figure it out. So let's try and teach them early. Let's prepare them for that. And technology is a big part of that too, of course, because that's how they're going to continue to keep learning. That's the whole thing. You're never going to be done learning.
Well, that's number one. If you want to presume there's any kind of intelligence in humans, you've got to also presume that you'll never know everything.
Exactly.
You can only try. Okay, so let's just go back to this. You didn't do this research for your health. When you take this research and you input it into what audiences want, which is a little bit, if you don't mind my saying, and I hope this doesn't sound patronizing, but it's the wrong way around because your audiences are going to choose you. You're not going to target market them in the future. I mean, that's certainly what we're finding on the internet because you could search for anything. Yep. So as the user, you will search for anything. You'll find exactly what it is, no matter how niched it is. And you will start to listen, to watch, to participate and engage with that content. As a content business, which is what Viacom is, when you design your production lineup, effectively, you decide what kinds of stuff you're going to have on TV, what kind of programs you're going to finance, what sort of audiences you're looking at attracting for advertisers. What do you learn from these millennials, Generation X's, and little big kids that you're implementing now?
One of the main reasons for doing this was because we want to reflect the world of our audience in the content that we're making.
Right.
And that doesn't necessarily mean the exact storyline, but that's the surroundings of that, right? Because everybody wants to see themselves on TV, essentially.
Right. Yeah.
Or the variety or the diversity or whatever that is. And we really want to influence that. And therefore, we share this a lot with our creative teams, with our content teams. Just as inspiration, not saying, oh, this person is asking for a show that does exactly that, so we have to make that.
Absolutely.
It's the background. It's around
that. Otherwise,
you'll
make
right?
a million shows that will appeal to
one person each. Yeah. Exactly. But one example is we have a show coming up on Nick Jr., Nella the Princess Knight. So she is a princess, but she is also a knight. And by the way, she's also mixed race.
Oh, and we're mixing up gender roles and races now. And everything. Is Caitlyn Jenner going to voice over this cartoon?
Gareth.
But it's that type of things, right? Where
hi, everybody.
You see, that,
I'm Caitlyn, the princess and the knight.
That's the Generation X in you coming out.
Oh, yeah, terrific. Just you wait for those realistic millennials to catch up. They'll be on my side.
Yeah, that's we're the cynicism cringing. Coming through.
All right, but hang on. So you're going to have this this girl who's a knight
Nella.
And a princess. Yeah. Okay. She leads a double life?
No, she just is both. So she plays both things. Therefore, it's about female empowerment. It's about all of those types of things that parents want their kids to think about because anybody can be anything, right? That's the whole idea. Right. And we actually yesterday at the Upfront, we had a bunch of 4 or 5-year-olds come on stage and talk to us. And one of the questions we asked one of them was, what do you want to do when you grow up? And this 4-year-old gets up and says, I want to change the world. And you're like, you're 4. You're not meant to be thinking that way. But that's clearly what's coming out,
right?
We
all know he'll make sandwiches one day for a living, but it's fine. Let him think that.
No, you won't.
We know he's going to be a complete fuck up and a disaster and probably end up on meth.
Because he'll grow
but he'll change
up
the world in his way.
Great sense of self.
Yeah, sure.
And a high value in himself.
Because of the meth.
He believes he can change the world,
meth.
And so he shall.
Okay.
Without any
narcotics. This is what I like. Is like Sia is convinced.
He's grounding.
He's grounding me. He's convinced he can modify me, which is nice.
Okay.
I mean, it means that, and I admit there's a tiny bit of plasticity.
Which shall become big soon enough.
Right. You'll tame the beast if you have to, right, Sia. Okay, but let's go back to these millennials, Gen Xs, and little big kids. What do you think this means for humanity? I mentioned earlier that it's a forward progression. I don't expect you to be, Immanuel Kant or to forecast the future of humans. But we are becoming more thoughtful.
Mm-hmm.
We're becoming more deliberate. We're starting to care more about each other. These are good things, right?
Absolutely. They're absolutely. We're also starting to care a lot more about the environment, because that's another thing that we know is kind of going away and we're going to have less of. So
you're
going to
give Al Gore a show.
Well, it's not my decision to make.
It's going to be called. In fact, give him a whole channel.
He had one, didn't he?
Well, he did.
Oh.
Weather Channel or something, right? No, he did. But these are the kinds of things that people do care about now. So the environment's one. Social diversity and tolerance in society is another.
Social issues.
Social justice, which
absolutely
is a big thing.
Yeah.
Maligned a lot of the time, and rightly so. But some of the time it has a place, and it certainly is a popular topic of discussion. What other things are important now that our grandparents would have laughed at?
Well, I think technology, we talked about that a lot as well already. And I just think that there is a lot more.
For them,
more
technology was a can opener. Right? For us, for us, technology is the future in every way, shape, and form. It's going to be our health. It's going to be everything.
I don't know if you've seen the movie The Hidden Figures.
Yes.
It was out recently.
Yeah.
What really struck me as I was watching that movie is I felt really uncomfortable whenever they referred to people as computers. And they called them computers because they were people who compute.
Yes.
And before there were machines who did that, people did that, and therefore it was a job description, essentially. Mm-hmm. Through that entire movie, I felt really uncomfortable when they were using that terminology. And I think that's what we're now starting to see. Like, we're using language in different ways that people are thinking about differently in various ways. And who knows what's going to be down the road, right? And we might all be replaced by machines one day, but that's the sort of thing we're thinking about, and people are actively thinking about it while still, happily living their lives.
Yeah, it's the most exciting thing about this is what you said earlier about those jobs that we don't know will exist. We don't know what they'll be, and we don't know what we'll call them one day, but they're going to be the jobs that might be the best jobs in the future. Now we sort of dream. This is another thing about millennials, right? They're obsessed with travel and new experiences. Millennials love that stuff. It matters more to them than having material wealth at
absolutely
home.
Experiences, I think. So travel one thing, experience is another, right? Because you don't necessarily need to travel to have experiences.
No, sure.
But that is an absolutely thing, important thing, but not just for millennials. For millennials as well as for kids and parents of kids, because giving them excuses to spend time together is a really, really important thing. We talk about modern fatherhood a lot, and I know I'm jumping here.
No, go
but,
on. This is fascinating, and a lot of people messaging in want to know things as well, so I'll get to those in a second.
Good, great.
Fathering?
What if you talk to dads today, and you ask them, okay, what was the relationship you had with your dad, and what is the relationship you want to have with your kid? Two fundamentally different answers.
Yeah.
And every dad says, I want to be more engaged, more involved, more equal with my partner. I want to have an actual emotional relationship with my kid. I don't just want to be the breadwinner or the financial figure. And all of those things are changing how we behave and how we, and on top of that, what a family looks like, as we alluded to earlier, has changed fundamentally. We're seeing a lot more different family structures in different ways. The Germans have come up with a really interesting term for that. They're calling the patchwork family. Basically, you put your family together from leftovers of other pieces. and you're choosing who your family is, in a way.
Yeah.
And you're starting to see that make that impact as well. And if you talk, so going back to the fatherhood, the experience is a really, really important part because they want to spend time with their kid, but they don't necessarily know what to do. And there's only so much you can play with building blocks. And therefore, having experiences and being able to do things like that, and allowing them, giving them license to do that. I mean, what's better than having license as a, I'm not a dad, but as a dad to watch cartoons again and play with, you know, trains and bricks.
Or PlayStations.
PlayStations, that's the other thing, yeah. Or virtual reality, or whatever the hell is next.
I can see you thinking about this, Sia.
Because I'm trying to figure out how it must be to now be able to guide Viacom into the future. So you have this information, and now what? It's empowering to a certain extent, but also
Didn't you hear they're casting Caitlyn Jenner as a knight and a princess? What's wrong with you? Don't you pay attention?
At the same time, it must be daunting because you want to keep to your brand, keep to its core, but you want to move with the times.
Yeah. No, absolutely. That's exactly it. And that's actually one of the reasons I love our brand so much, because you think about MTV. Yeah. MTV has always wanted to be for young people. Mm-hmm. It doesn't grow up with its audience. It stays where it is, and it wants to stay where it is. It's the now. And that's why we constantly have to keep evolving what we do. And that's why we do a lot of this research. And we're going to do this again in a few years' time, because we keep looking at it constantly. And I often get asked, oh, what's the most surprising thing that you found? What's counterintuitive? And my answer to that is, well, if I had a lot of counterintuitive stuff, then I wouldn't have been doing my job for the last 5 years, because I should have been warning you about what's coming, because that's my job.
So when you go into meetings, I mean, do you have these heavy hitters, these people who are commissioning massive TV projects, these people who are making films, because it's another part of what you guys do. These are the guys and girls who make the decisions, and you have to present to them, and they make those decisions based on the research you bring them?
They make
it's a decision. Hell of a job.
It's not quite that straightforward, but it's one of the impact. It's one of the input factors. Yeah. So by doing all of this, we're really just adding. Everybody makes decisions based on lots of different things, and that's just one of the chunks in the armor that we give people to think about and to make those decisions.
So you watch a show at home that's one of the Viacom shows, and you're watching this, and you see something that is just completely out of context and wrong, and doesn't fit into any of the research you've given them.
Never happens.
Do you call? Of course it happens. Do you ever call someone up and go, hey, what the hell's going on here? Don't you pay attention to what I bring you? This is not something that for this audience. What are you trying to frighten them all away? No wonder your ratings are so low, you idiot. Get them fired.
I wouldn't go that far, but yeah, there's conversations every once in a while. And that's also why we do a lot of content testing, right? Mm-hmm. We take concepts, we take pilots, we test them with people, and we try through research to impart our wisdom on the creative community who don't tend to like being told what to do. But it's just there, you know.
Who do people in the millennial category love in terms of they love, who do they love? Amy Schumer?
Amy Schumer, actually, she's a millennial, but her head writer is a Gen Xer. So a lot of the humor she's using is Gen X humor, which is it's another thing that's really, really funny, right? But Broad City is one of the really successful shows from a comedy perspective that features very, very millennial themes.
Right. Big Bang Theory is not in yours, but it's a good show. That one gets the same sort of audience.
It is actually on Comedy Central as
it
well.
Is? But right. Yeah. Okay.
But yeah, a lot of that type of stuff. And actually, while we're talking about sitcoms, there's also a point about nostalgia.
Yes.
Lots of people are watching Friends everywhere in the world. Mm. That show is 20 years old. Actually, it finished 20 years ago. No, that's not true.
No.
It started 20 years ago. Ran for 10 years, so it's 10 years old. If you forget the fact that there's no cell phones in that show, it's a pretty...
Wow.
Oh, my goodness.
Can you imagine?
Today we did all forget there were no cell phones
in
that
show.
That's
why they sat at the coffee shop all the time.
They couldn't fucking call each other.
They couldn't. There's nothing else to do.
Wow, that's a frightening thought. There weren't cell phones in that show.
Yep.
There was nothing.
Have you seen, by the way, how backward all those actors and actresses have gone? Only one who still looks good is Jennifer Aniston. The rest look terrible. They've really let themselves go.
I actually feel bad for them now.
Yeah, they didn't have phones. Shame, Sia. What a horrible... What a deprived life they led.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I mean, like, Joey was harassing girls. He wasn't on Tinder.
But hang on.
That show would be one-dimensional if he was doing this all day, just swiping.
But you
doesn't make good television, does it?
Complete your sentence, because you said if you can forget that they don't have cell phones. Mm.
The stories that they're talking about are incredibly valid today and are incredibly relevant. And that's why people like to watch it again if they've seen it before. And, of course, there's a whole bunch of people who've never seen it. And to them, it's interesting and it's good storytelling. Friends is a success everywhere in the world.
Well-written, good cast. You know, it had all the ingredients.
And that speaks partly to the nostalgia of the Gen Xers. Seen this before, I want to do that again.
Yes.
But also, it's not really the nostalgia
millennial
because
hipsters.
But the millennials can't remember it, so it's not nostalgia. But it's that looking for a simpler time type thing and bringing that into relevant and current themes. And that's one of the reasons why shows like that are working really well for all audiences.
Is that why we're also seeing a lot of revivals?
Absolutely.
So Will and Grace is coming back. Roseanne's coming back. Like, that just seems like it's a trend that came out of nowhere.
And you've seen the same thing on movies for the last few years. There's a lot of sequels. There's a lot of remakes.
Baywatch is coming back.
It's a really good movie.
Can we have less Zac Efron? Is that possible?
And the Dwayne The Rock Johnson, actually.
Yeah,
They're leading the
how about
movie
those
themselves.
Two? How about those two we just scrap for a little while and we can get nostalgic about that.
But Zac Efron's nostalgia too, right? You think back to where he came from and
I don't remember.
High School Musical.
Okay.
That was like 2005.
Okay. Zac Efron is nice to look at for some people. Leave them alone.
Let's move along.
True.
What is next for you? I mean, if you've done these research surveys and you've figured out pretty much what's going on generationally, what other stuff are you doing that's interesting that we might want to know about?
Well, one of the themes that came out was that modern dadhood is different, so mm-hmm. we want to explore that in more detail, and we're in the middle of that. We're also looking at what movie viewing looks like and how do people relate to movies all the way from the cinema screen to streaming at home and how that journey travels.
Well, the second screen stuff is exciting, right? Because what you've got there is people are watching whatever you guys have put huge amounts of money into producing. And they're watching you on the TV or on their laptop or they're watching it in the cinema maybe. And they've got their phone out at the same time.
Yep.
Oh.
And they tend to talk about what they're watching.
You don't do this, Sia? When you're watching something, you don't also have your phone there.
Oh, there we go. Sorry, you know, I thought you meant like people are now watching two different things at the same time. So but like commenting about it on Twitter.
Sure, right.
Yes.
So you're having a conversation about what you're watching, unless what you're watching is so incredibly immersive that, you know, it's that one drama you want to watch. You don't want to get disturbed. Mm-hmm. But other than that, you're having conversations about it. And that's what makes some of this content really pop as well, is because it's conversational.
When you were talking about Friends just now, I was thinking, because Mabali said, what are the areas of conflict between Gen Xs and millennials? But what are the areas of mutual interest? What are the areas where they can see common ground?
I think they all want the best for everyone, but how they think about getting that might be slightly different. So on Gen Xers, it's a slightly more, I'm using your word now, or your word, selfish approach to things. I want to be me, and let me be me.
Yeah.
While on millennials, we're having a slightly different expression of that as well, is yes, I want to be me, but I want you to be you. And therefore, the way we're working together is slightly different. And by the way, who I am might change by tomorrow, because I'm a very fluid person. What they're absolutely common on is the acceptance, the diversity, the trying to make the world a better place, probably in slightly different ways.
I like it. It sounds like it's a positive outcome for everybody. Thank you so much for coming to speak to us, Christian.
Thanks for having me.
Can I ask one last question,
sure,
which might seem silly at the surface? So the little big kids, who's Generation Z? And then what do we call the people who come after Generation Z?
I was asking the exact same question.
Double A.
You go by Excel logic. Uh-huh. But it doesn't have a term yet. There's no terminology. I've also started to think, as we're looking at this, I'm like, I don't like talking about generations anymore moving forward. I think I'm going to call people what they are, as in kids and teens and young adults and adults, because as we're seeing, and this is another piece that we're working on, by the way, to finish a thought from earlier, people, everybody in on the age spectrum is reacting to the now.
Mm-hmm.
And what does that reaction look like? And how does that differ by age? And is that really driven by generation, or is that driven by life stage, or is that driven by stuff that happens around us? That's an area that we now really want to dig into, because this is what it's led us to, right? We want to keep going.
Yeah. So in short, Mubs, it doesn't matter what the label is.
Mm.
Yeah.
Which is a very Generation X thing to say.
Yeah, because we didn't want a label.
No, nobody wants labels. All right, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Pleasure to meet you. Christian Kurtz is the Senior Vice President of Global Consumer Insights at Viacom. He's out in South Africa. He's flying back today. And we thought it would be interesting to talk to him about all of these fascinating differences, you know, between generations and the ways different generations think about the world, what matters to them, what doesn't, what they like about each other, what they don't. And I for one, am thrilled to hear all this stuff, because it's always interesting to try to forecast what might be next while you're figuring out what's going on right now.
Mm. CliffCentral.com.